Blog Talk Radio.
This is the news in brief from the United Nations. Life-saving medical supplies reached Afghanistan by air on Monday, the first UN shipment to arrive since the Taliban takeover more than a week ago. Announcing the news, the World Health Organization said that the successful airlift meant that it could partially replenish health facilities' reserves and ensure that services can continue for now. More than 12 tons of supplies arrived in the northern airport of Mazar-e-Sharif aboard a plane provided by the government of Pakistan. The WHO said that the shipment consisted of trauma kits and emergency health kits, enough to cover the basic health needs of more than 200,000 people. The supplies will be delivered immediately to 40 health facilities in 29 provinces across Afghanistan, the UN agency added. In a related development, UN Refugee Chief Filippo Grandi has appealed for help for the many millions in need in Afghanistan and in neighbouring countries. In the appeal on Monday for long-term solutions for Afghans whose lives have been blighted by 40 years of war, the High Commissioner for Refugees said that although thousands had managed to escape via Kabul airport, there will still be millions who need the international community to act. As the school year begins for millions of children in the Northern Hemisphere, the UN on Monday issued a series of COVID-19 risk reduction measures to ensure that in-person lessons can go ahead despite rising infection rates. All school staff should receive a coronavirus vaccine, and so should vulnerable children aged 12 and above, said UN Children's Fund UNICEF and the World Health Organization. In the 53 countries that make up the WHO European region, the UN agencies also urged better ventilation in the classroom, smaller class sizes, physical distancing and regular COVID-19 testing. The development comes amid a rise in COVID infections caused by the Delta variant that have made the risk of transmission within schools much more likely, both UN agencies warned. To counter this and another year of disrupted schooling, more people need to be offered the COVID-19 jab, which remains our best line of defence against the virus, said WHO's Dr. Hans Kluge. He insisted that for the pandemic to end, we must rapidly scale up vaccinations fairly in all countries to protect the most vulnerable everywhere. Tried and tested public health and social measures must also continue, the WHO official said, such as testing, sequencing, tracing, isolation and quarantine. Ensuring everyone's right to a nationality is more important than ever, the UN Refugee Agency said on Monday, marking the 60th anniversary of the UN Convention to End Statelessness. In an appeal for more countries to adopt the convention, the UN High Commissioner for Refugees said that modern-day challenges like COVID-19 and climate change had added to the problems of stateless people. Having a nationality and the protection of a government that nationality affords can make a life-saving difference, even more so in times of crises, whether it's vaccination, evacuation, or providing a social safety net that is needed, Mr. Grandi said. Globally, 4.2 million people are known to be stateless, but the true number of persons not recognised as citizens by any country is likely to be much higher given gaps in data collection. To date, 77 states have joined the 1961 Convention. Since 2010, 40 states have formalised their commitment to reduce statelessness by becoming parties. In the same period, more than 800,000 stateless people are known to have had their statelessness resolved. Katie Dartford, UN News.
I think we lucked out again. I think we have John Grant on the line. I noticed there's several callers already. That's good. I'm glad you called in to All listen right. to the UN News in Brief. If you want to talk with John or I, please push 1 on your dial pad on your telephone. John, it's been a big week since you've been gone.
Oh, yeah. You know, Afghanistan is, they're now officially out. The four-star general declared that the U.S. military was out. And, of course, there's the messy, ambiguous unclear, vague kind of fact that over 100 Americans still reside in Afghanistan, and whether they want to get out or can't get out or locked somewhere and is a big, big question. And I know Fox News last night was some woman, I don't know her name, but was railing on and on about how, you know, we've left Afghanistan with these Americans captive over there, basically. And I don't think that's clear at all. Time will tell. Of course, what happens to those apparently 100-plus Americans, many of them, some of them at least, might want to stay. You know, they might have an Afghan family. They don't want to leave. And, they've been there. They've been working and doing something. And of course, the big question is, if that's the case, will they be harassed, arrested, murdered, or what? Or will they be left alone, if they aren't political and remain, focused on their family or whatever they're focused on? But again, nobody knows. And of course, it's a political football. The right likes to make it out as they're like captives like Iran under Jimmy Carter. And but the reality is obviously somewhere in the messy middle. We don't know yet. I was just in a conversation at the Barnes & Noble here earlier today with this really wonderful guy, 79-year-old Vietnam vet. He was a Navy scuba diver. rather conservative, right-wing guy, but very pleasant and, old enough that he enjoyed conversation. So we had a wonderful conversation. He seemed to think that, that it was a mess. He made it very clear he didn't like Joe Biden, and I made it clear that I have some issues with Joe Biden, but I think that he's probably done the best that one can do after a 20-year debacle that probably never should have happened. It's kind of interesting to ponder the conditions. What do you think of this last week and, now that we're officially out of
it? Yeah, we're officially out of it. Well, I think I don't think I wrote this in the local newspaper.
Uh-huh.
As a letter to the editor back in, I think, 2003.
Mm-hmm.
It was right after I waited till they invaded Iraq before
right.
I wrote it. And it was, and I said, I've got to dig through my files. I'd like to copy to rub it in a lot of people's face locally.
Uh-huh.
Because, it was always, I wrote, it was always an international law enforcement problem. It was not a thing that could be settled with these. That's the quote that I remember writing. But
I think you're
really,
right. I agree with
really,
you. Yeah.
I mean, it was never really a cause for invasion and occupation. And I think I also pointed out something I stole from Noam Chomsky. It was a fact I stole that was it's a violation of the Nuremberg about an illegal occupation and aggression. I mean, we moved right on it. We punished punished whole generations. Now back then, how about this 2003?
Yeah.
I had no idea at that time that we would stay this long in these countries,
right,
in these countries. And, but I realized that I was setting up myself up for an argument for the very institution that we just heard the news from and the International Court of Justice in, The Hague. Oh, I think that's how you pronounce it, over in Brussels. I mean, these are places where you put people like bin Laden and his gang,
Yeah.
And you do a coalition effort. Instead, it turned into NATO and the U.S., which to me was just like, it was just, you know, couple that with the knowledge, and I don't know how many people knew at that time that we had largely created the conditions for the Taliban and for bin Laden. To become Al-Qaeda.
Well, we certainly funded Bin Laden. We did this
to blacken the Soviet Union's eyes, and Ronald Reagan was deeply involved in that, you know?
Absolutely.
So, I mean,
and
also
Jimmy Carter's Secretary of State, what was his name? Brezhnev. Brzezinski literally said that he wanted to finance and support these Mujahideen, which, of course, Osama bin Laden was, in order to give Russia, or Soviet Union at the time, their, quote, Vietnam. And that's what we did. And, of course, I mean, that's a pretty, you know, the Cold War justified it, but in retrospect, you know, that's a pretty loathsome goal, you know, to cause another country to get lost in a killing quagmire in a third world country, you know. What a horrible testimony for Brzezinski to have said that. You know, this is, again, under Jimmy Carter, before even Reagan. So, yeah, I mean, it's very damnable. And, of course, once that happened, once we did, you know, send in money and arms and whatnot to, you know, create this Vietnam for quagmire for Afghanistan or for Russia, and they got out, we got out as well. We completely abandoned the place, and, you know, we contributed to making it nothing but wreckage because we'd created this, quote, Vietnam. Then we left and said, well, fuck them. We don't care about the Afghans. All we cared about was getting the Russians out, you know. And so we left this vacuum for the Taliban. And the Taliban, who, you know, I think it refers to as teachers or students or something, these people took responsibility to try to resurrect something out of this wreckage that the United States and Russia had contributed to. At least that's my take of how it evolved. You know, the Taliban are not Al-Qaeda. They're not ISIS. You know, granted, they are Muslims and they're rather strict, but, you know, it's a country like that with a long history of violent interactions within it that you know, the Taliban evolved out of that. And it's very, very complicated. It's not as simple, obviously, as the demonization that we've done with Muslims around the world. And, you know, I think we have to start addressing that sort of stuff. And we have to accept that the Taliban are back, and we really fucked it up, because Rumsfeld was offered, you know, talk about, you said it was a criminal effort, right? The International Criminal Court and things like that, that it wasn't a worthy invasion. Well, amen. In fact, the Taliban themselves said, you know, in 2001, I think, or maybe early 2002, that, okay, they cried uncle. Okay, we don't want, you know, B-52s flattening us and all this. We will negotiate effectively a surrender with you, and we will agree to turn over Osama bin Laden to an international judicial forum to be tried. And Rumsfeld,
refused. Yeah. Well, they said they wanted to turn it over to a Muslim country. I think that was part of it.
That
most Americans don't realize that that there are Muslim countries that are signatories to the International Court of Justice.
Have a lot to do with Qatar. We're now dealing with Qatar. That's where we're going to have our diplomatic relations with Afghanistan from now on. Well, Qatar, we have a base there. Al Jazeera comes out of Qatar. You know, all the Saudi Arabia and all those countries have tried to crush, destroy Qatar because of their liberalism in that way. And so, they could have gone to Qatar, whatever, however you pronounce it, with that.
Qatar.
Qatar. Excuse moi.
That's okay. Well, yeah, but that's the. I think that's the real tragedy, but most Americans don't realize that, we refused to sign that. I think I can't remember what what administration was against signing that.
The International Criminal Court, ICC?
Yeah, I don't think our government acknowledges that as a
refuse. And, of course, that's why we went into Afghanistan and Iraq as an invasion force, because we said, fuck international relations, fuck the Geneva Convention. And what did Dick Cheney say? Well, we're not going to, he didn't say this, we're not going to go with international organizations. What he did say is we're going to go to the dark side. And that's what they did, America, somebody said, well, we're an empire now. We do what the fuck we want, And that's what they did. And, it came back, and it's biting us in the ass right now. People like to blame Joe Biden. Well, why don't you go down to Texas and blame that guy that paints his toes in the bathtub, that loser George W. Bush who... always looks like an idiot whenever he says anything. Obviously, he's not an idiot, but let's focus. If we're going to blame somebody, let's focus it in the right place.
Do you think? All right, these names come to mind, that are in the media a lot.
Right.
And they're all, and they're women. Meghan McCain.
Right.
She's
right.
left the popular daytime TV show, The View, to go back and take care of her child.
Right.
I think it's in Florida or Texas where her and her husband live. Her husband is now on TV making a living. Of course, her mother, Cindy McCain, is sitting on $200 million. So Meghan is taking care of her life and her children, generation wealth.
Right. Well,
Mitka,
they're very comfortable.
I think is her name. Wait, let me finish my list. Mitka marries the Morning Joe on television. Mitka is Brzezinski. That's her maiden name.
Right. Of course.
Brzezinski's daughter is married to Joe on Morning Joe, and he was originally from Congress. I think he was in the House of Reps.
Yeah, he did a couple terms, I think, in Congress, right.
And then we have Liz Cheney, who's now sort of playing a quote-unquote heroic role as a Republican in opposing Donald Trump and his sycophants his simpaticos.
His cult of psychopathy.
I was sitting there, standing in the living room. The kitchen's right next door to the living room, so I came out of the kitchen, which I seem to spend too much of my time in, and the news is going on, and I was looking at Liz Cheney, and she's being noble, unlike her father, sitting there. Now, we've all, in our household, listeners, if you haven't seen the movie, you ought to watch it quick. I think it's on Prime or Netflix. It's called Vice. It's a hilariously sick
movie. Adam McKay. Great movie. Yeah. Funny. Yeah.
Yeah, funny and dark. Yeah, dark.
Right. It's a tragic comedy, I guess you'd call it.
Right, and we all watched that with several bowls of popcorn and as much beer and pop as we could swill down between laughing and gasping at the same time. when that came out, and it was hilarious and made us feel a lot better. But right. I was thinking when the news came out and it was Liz Cheney, I think, holding a press conference on the steps of the Congress about her position, unpopular position within the Republican Party, and losing her leadership positions and blah, blah, blah.
Right.
And I was going, all I did was just stand in the living room, my mouth open, my apron on. I was, you know, I have an apron I wear when I do dishes and cook.
Well, I'm trying to get the image of that there, Mike.
Yeah. I know. It's, and my wife and son are sitting there, and they have recliners. I don't.
Okay.
You're working
in the kitchen with the apron, and the women sitting in the recliner watching.
It's because, we live in the dictatorship of the proletariat here. I mean, they work for a living. I am on Social Security,
that makes sense. I'm a cook too, so I get it. Yeah.
Yeah. So the working class is sitting there, and I'm under their dictatorship of the proletariat, and I think I have this spatula in my hand, and I'm watching Liz Cheney, go after Donald Trump and the quote unquote insurrectionists.
Right.
And I go, is it wrong for us to hold the children of war criminals to account?
Mm.
That's what I said.
Yeah.
Is it wrong to hold the children of war criminals to account for the sins
of
their parents?
What did the dictators of the proletariat have to say about that?
They said yes. It would be wrong to do that.
Right.
So I took my fat Stalinist ass back to the kitchen, grumbled, and I didn't break any dishes, but I did. I just went back to work.
Right. Well, I think I see Liz Cheney as like the quote out of the Shakespeare's Julius Caesar, that she has a lean and hungry look. In other words, here is a woman that's making a long bet. And she could get it. That the Trump cult of psychopathy, or whatever you want to call it, is not going to sustain through 2022 and 2024. That 2022 may break the mold of the usual case, not always, but usually. The party in presidential power loses legislatively in the off year. But not always, and this year could be quite extraordinary because of all the lunacy and all the pandemic ridiculousness of Florida's governor and the panhandle, be it the hospitals are overflowing like, the MASH units after a major battle, there's bodies everywhere and people who are coming in. One guy died. He came in for cancer treatment. They couldn't put him in the ICU and he died. The woman was saying, we're trying to get him into Colorado. We're trying to all these other states. They're all tied up. And the man just croaked. Who would have survived had he had ICU room. Anyway, when all that stuff shuffles out, Liz Cheney, I think, is betting what I call the cult of psychopathy is going to just fade away. And the Republican Party will, lick its wounds. And you'll have people saying, oh, Trump, who? I had nothing to do with him. And, that the party will try to stagger back. And, that she would be the perfect leader for that as a presidential candidate. I think that's her calculation. And I think she talked it over with her demonic father, and he agreed. Yeah. power. Right. Hey, honey, you got it. That's the formula. You could really get it, some real power out of this. And she's, of course, still in the House, and, she's can't – whether she'll be reelected, who knows. But anyway, I think that's her calculation. I don't see her as any great star of progressivism or liberalism or whatever, I think, she wants power. That's what runs that Cheney family, you know. It's probably keeping Dick Cheney alive with an with a new heart, you know. The idea.
How many is that?
Huh?
How many hearts has he had? I forgot. I can't remember.
It's only one. I think it's only one. I don't think he's on his second. Oh. I don't know. But, you know, he still had a good run with a new heart.
He's still holding his own.
Yeah. He looks quite. You know, Rumsfeld croaked. You know, his pal Rumsfeld, and he's the guy that with Dick Cheney, got stumble-bum George W. to go along and be, hey, I can be the war president. I don't know what the fuck I'm doing here, you know, but yes, I'm the war president. Yeah, that sounds good, you know, and suddenly he became the war president, and in order to be the war president, you have to sustain a war. You have to keep it going. And so here we go. You know, we have these not only one war invasion of Afghanistan, but he decided, well, shit, let's have two wars. You know, they used to have the Colin Powell doctrine, the military doctrine. I don't know if it kind of got attached to Colin Powell's name, but it was a doctrine that the Pentagon established that for the United States out of the Cold War and in the new post Cold War period, that we would sustain a military sophisticated enough, strong enough, financed enough, large enough to sustain two major wars. And here was Don Rumsfeld, the defense secretary. He'd been defense secretary before as well. He was the youngest. Now he's the oldest defense secretary. He decided he was going to make the military lean. He was going to make this super-duper military that would sustain two wars, but he was going to lean it down. Well, how do you lean it down when you take the Colin Powell two-war doctrine to its max and you have two wars? You know, I mean, you're pushing the military Pentagon doctrine to its extreme. Not exactly the climate for leaning down the military. So they were kind of contradicting themselves with this idea of leaning the military down by having two fucking wars, two full bore wars, invasion occupations going on. And so that, you know, and in fact they were so eager to go into Iraq that they dropped the ball in Afghanistan. I mean, instead of focusing on that war, invasion, occupation, they said, well, hell, we'll just let that one go. These are a bunch of ragheads. We can handle them with our hand tied behind our back, you know. And now we went over and we were going to take on Iraq. And obviously it all backfired and it all has turned into a big debacle, you know. We need to analyze this and discuss this as where America is going to go in the future, because this is a festering wound that still exists there. Think of all that trillions of dollars that were spent, multi-trillion with a T, you know, trillions of dollars, tax dollars, and, you know, notwithstanding the young American men and women who were killed and maimed and all from these wars, and of course the people we slaughtered one way or another, and the places we wrecked, there's a legacy there. Think of New Orleans now, hit by a storm is probably worse than Katrina, but fortunately the dikes held and it didn't have the flooding that it had to Katrina. I mean, think of what, you know, all those trillions of dollars, you know, several billion of that, which is pocket change when you're talking trillions, could have done to improve the protections for the Gulf Coast because of climate change, hurricanes. They come up the Gulf, which is warming by many, many degrees, which, you know, it's this bathtub that these storms come out of the Caribbean right into the Gulf of Mexico bathtub, warm bathtub, and it just churns them up and sends them right to New Orleans, you know. You know, think instead of wrecking Afghanistan and wrecking Iraq, you know, we could have really done some wonderful things. Turn New Orleans with, you know, a lot of below sea level issues into the Amsterdam of America, you know, which is a below sea level city that does just fine. You know, they legalize pot, they legalize prostitution. They don't worry about that kind of stuff. They worry about the goddamn floods, you know. and it's true. It's true. You know, I was over in Amsterdam, and the psychologist we talked to said, you know, the Amsterdam mother teaches their kid that there's a lot of temptations in this port city that we've had for centuries, and you're the master of your fate. You're the captain of your own ship. There, you know, you have an internal loci of control. Well, we don't have that in here. We don't think that way. We think, in other words, we're individuals. We have the right to do everything we want, anything we want. Get out of my fucking way. And we rely then on exterior loci of control, like police, courts, military, and all that kind of stuff. And it's, you know, coming around to bite us in the butt. You know, that we Amsterdam has all these dikes, an incredible system. And there's an apocryphal story that because of all their flooding in Amsterdam, they used to have these connected to prisons, I guess they were supposedly, and they were these rooms that were connected to the canals, many canals running through Amsterdam. And there was a valve that connected the canal to this room, and in the middle of it they had a seat and a pedal. You could pedal, and you had to pedal or else the water would rise. And the water would, you know, if you didn't do anything, it sat there like a dumb shit and, you know, like lazy and didn't do anything, didn't work, the water would rise up and you would drown. So you had to constantly work and pedal in order to keep the water valve out, you know, the water in the out from rising. And, you know, that was as used as an object lesson for people who, you know, look, you have to work or else you're going to drown. Now, that's said to be apocryphal, who knows, but it's a wonderful metaphor, if nothing else, for why Amsterdam is the way it is, you know. Yeah, and it's interesting to compare Amsterdam to New Orleans, of course, which is a wild city with Mardi Gras and anything goes, sex, drugs, rock and roll, and blues, you know, all of it. We love it. We love New Orleans for that. You know, it's also a target for new storms that get bigger and bigger and bigger. And then we could talk about California. I mean, talk about fires and global warming and, you know, the fire season. Now what, all year long? And, you know, they're about to throw out this governor in this ridiculous recall where it takes a majority to throw out the governor. You got to get 51%. And at the same time, you're voting for 46 possible candidates to replace him if you give 51% to throw him out. But the winner of that 46 contingent running for governor only needs to have a plurality, or you only need, you know, you could have 20% and you could win. It's the stupidest thing.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh yeah, it's absolutely moronic. It's like the Three Stooges ran the thing. This Fox News right wing black dude, Larry Elder, I think his name is, right?
Yeah,
and
Larry Elder.
He's the lead candidate, and they're running ads on Fox News, and they're political ads, but he's actually selling. You know, Fox News does a lot of snake oil sales. They do a lot of medicines and things like, you know, that are going to help you out. They're, you know, they're like snake oil. But they're one of those now, and he advertises that. This one has him running around in a cigarette boat on some lake in California. It's like he's at the wheel of this thing, looking like he's in charge, and he's zipping across the, and he gets out and he's selling this X Factor, you know, to make you, you know, healthy and potent and everything else, you know, and he's just, I mean, it's like a campaign ad on, you know, free campaign ad for some ridiculous snake oil that Fox News is selling along with the Trump big lie, you know. Anyway,
well,
enough
of
that.
I don't know how long, I just don't know how long. I mean, like I said, we got Mika Brzezinski married to Morning Joe. I mean, all these media moguls, real moguls, people, and then and Larry Elder, you know, this guy. I think I'm pretty sure the current California governor was mixing it up with the woman that is now, I think it's Eric or Donald Trump squeeze. I can't remember her name, Kimberly.
Really?
She gave this outrageous speech.
Oh, Kimberly Guilfoyle.
Yeah, she was California governor. They were dating for quite a while. Yeah.
Oh, she's a real, real barracuda, let me tell you, boy.
Yeah. I think it was too much for him.
Garrett Newsom.
Well, I mean, it's this incestuous nature. It really doesn't even it doesn't even stick to partisan things. It has a lot to do with power and wealth to me. That's
absolutely
all I see. We had a caller, I'm sorry if you're still listening. He called in, punched one. I put him in the green room real quickly, and I told him it'd be a minute, and then hung up. And there's other callers. So if you want to be on the show, you need to punch one to let me know what's going on.
Maybe I went on a little too long. Sorry. We'll
it was just a minute. You went to California when I went to the green room. So it wasn't very long. You know, the guy didn't have to wait that long.
Gotcha.
So he just didn't wait. Yeah. So, Hunter, if you call in, call back if you want to, and I'll put you on quicker. So this is what bothers me is this inability, it seems like, for Americans, no matter what party, to not see through these games. These games that the wealthy and powerful play with us, and more importantly, play with our taxpayer dollars. And you've got a good point. I mean, I really sort of wasted my weekend. You know, I'm fascinated with technology and YouTube. I don't like to do this, but I mean, and you always got to be careful. You know what you're watching. But it's hard to deny a reality when you have these nerds out in cars and trucks driving around, storm chasing a hurricane, you know what I mean? And it's like, this is not a political opinion. This is real, you know what I mean? There are real telephone poles being blown over. You're seeing roofs tore off the top of buildings, you know.
Absolutely.
You're seeing all kinds of devastation, you know. And I'm thinking, this is incredible. I'm watching this in Kansas, real time, on a live stream. And there wasn't just one. There were several of them. On a live stream on YouTube, and I was watching it in real time, and I was like, oh, I just put it on, I'd just leave it on and try to write, ha-ha. I couldn't get anything done. And it was hypnotizing, mesmerizing. It was only in the 21st century could you do that. I mean, I'm like going, this is amazing that these guys are sitting in their cars, you know, eating potato chips and drinking energy drinks while filming this stuff, blowing all across the hood of their car. And and I was thinking that all at the same time they're withdrawing troops from Afghanistan. You mentioned it, but I'm going to just put it easy.
Go ahead.
You know, those troops could be doing some damn good help down there right now
absolutely.
In New Orleans, in that area.
Absolutely.
You know, and And they don't have to take it over like a police state. I mean, they could do a lot of things to take care of that place, man. There was the next day after it was Sunday, I was doing that, and then yesterday I checked in with the same guys who were still streaming, but they had drones. These guys had drones after the wind died down, and they're
That's
flying over.
That's
probably
wise.
These,
yeah,
and they and. They, but they're all click. It's clickbait. I mean, headline: looters, boat burning, and looters. Now I don't like it. Clickbait, like an idiot. I clicked it, and it was a drone flying over a burnt building. Okay, a building that had been burned out, and from the storm, and there were people pulling cases of food and all kinds of stuff out of the part that wasn't burned, and there was a boat burning. Yes, they're accurate about that. But I mean, you know, that's what they do. They put an alarmist headline. But this is a burned out building. You know what I mean? I wouldn't call it looting. You know what I mean? It was like they broke the windows out and were you know,
and
stealing
it's
stuff.
Not like
out of
a riot looting or anything like that.
No, this was just. It was sort of funny. I was thinking if I was there was this one black guy who was standing around, I think it looked like he was swilling a free beer. And when his drone came down, it must have been a good 50 feet, 25, 50 feet over the top of the burned out building. And you could look, the drone could look down through the roof. The roof was blown off.
Right. Wow.
And you could see all the people scurrying and digging through the burned trash to find out if there's anything salvageable. This one guy was hoisting a beer or a drink. I don't know what it was. And you could just see it in his eyes when he looked up and he saw the drone. You could see him looking at the drone, and the drone was looking at him. And he put the drink down. He put the drink from his mouth, and you could just sort of see him yell, "Hey, look," and he's pointing up there to the sky. And I was watching that, and I thought, that must be what people in Afghanistan think.
Yeah. Well, you know, the thing that always gets me, I mean, it's comical, and Ali Velshi from MSNBC was there, and he was doing this, and there's a guy on the Weather Channel who's famous for it, is, you know, standing out, you know, with a wide stance in a rain gear, you know, as there's 110 mile an hour wind coming at you, and they're talking on their microphone, and here we are, you know, and I'm always waiting for, you know, like a 2x4 to come flying by and knock them on the ass. Or even worse, a flying stop sign to decapitate him right by the camera, you know. But, you know, I guess he was, Ali Velshi was, he was hiding sort of behind a building, which protected him somewhat, but he was pointing at it. It's still pretty rough. And he's like got this wide stance, and it's like it's a macho thing, you know. It's this macho thing, you know. And of course, Dan Rather, I believe that's how Dan Rather became a national news person. He was a local news guy in Texas, and he was famous for standing out in the hurricane winds with his microphone.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And, you know, that got him into the national consciousness and, you know, became a national TV guy.
Shit.
You know, hurricane work, you know. Like,
well, I just saw that, and the only thing I only really learned out of the whole full afternoon of being spellbound on YouTube watching these live streams of the hurricane coming in, you know. Well, the only thing I learned from these tornado chasers or weather chasers was the safest place to be is to be in a concrete cinder block car wash.
Right. Right. There you go.
One guy was driving by, and he goes, "There it is. There it is." And
his
co-pilot said, "There's a car wash. That's where we're going when it gets bad. When it gets up to 140 mile per hour winds, we're going in there. And we're going to drive into the car wash." I was like, Jesus Christ.
Well,
like, I can't believe it. That and the looter, the so-called looter, looking up and seeing the drone.
Well, you know,
the drone's
when I was raised in South Dade County. We built an addition on the house that my parents bought, this old concrete block shack owned by two hermits out in the woods. And in the rural area with avocado groves, lime groves, tomato fields, and whatnot. And I remember it was the Hurricane Covey, and Inspector very vigilant about it. You had to put these metal straps that were holding the roof down, very frequent along the beams, so that there was a real concerted effort to strap down the roof so it wouldn't fly off, you know, catch the wind and fly off. Well, that house that my parents eventually sold during what was it, Andrew, that unbelievable hurricane down in South Dade County, that house, those people for some reason decided that they were going to cut holes in the roof, and they put these plastic bubble windows in the roof over the living room and whatnot, right?
Well, like,
which was
like
nice.
Skylight.
You know, you could get a little skylight and, rain and be nice. Well, alas, I mean, my parents went to all this trouble inspecting it to get this roof strapped down. Well, you do that, and those things immediately pop off in such a wind. And then, you know, the wind just comes in those openings and sucks out your house, and you know it just. I walked through that house. It was just a unbelievable wreckage in it. I think the people survived. Somebody, my brother, went down and talked to them. They had hidden in this little closet we had all night.
Wow.
They just hid in this closet as the winds just ripped the goddamn house apart because they put these holes in the roof. You know, I mean, if you strap your roof down and you put holes in the roof, it kind of defeats the purpose. Anyway, they survived. And,
Well, I think maybe people learn, but I don't. I'll tell you another thing. I listened to Washington Journal this morning on C-SPAN, and they always. Now, it's not accurate by any means, but. It was what do you think is the legacy of the withdrawal from Afghanistan was the question, and it was interesting. It was like over 90%. Now 90% said it was embarrassing. It's embarrassing. It's a tragedy. But we needed to get out earlier. I mean, one crackpot called up and he sounded sort of like a pacifist, and he said, well, it was all bad, and the corporations that made the most money out of it is horrible. And he says, but we can't draft women. You know, we need to call up Congress and tell them to not let the Selective Service System accept women for the draft. Right. And I'm like, what? And this is the kind of hybrid mentality of that you listen to on these call-in Washington Journal in the morning. But 80 to 90% of the callers were not happy. And some of them blamed Joe Biden. Some of them said, we would have done better, the Republicans, we would have done better. We had to get out, you know. And then there was a 10 or 20%. There were 10 or 20%, John, who called in just to go off and say, you know, I would call them bomb them into the Stone Age, you know, turn the whole place into a parking lot. You know,
yeah, that was the, you I'm know, saying, was it Curtis LeMay, the general, that was his, you know, bomb them into the Stone Age or turn it into a parking lot and all this kind of stuff. You know, but that's all bluster, bravado, you know, macho blustering. That's, you know, it's silly because that's not going to happen, you know. The United States of America... you know, is not ISIS. It has to have some modicum of moral compass guidance. You know, it can't, you know, like we can't have death camps like the Nazis did because, you know, you just can't get away with that. So that, you know, we have this moral compass that, you know, in order to sustain ourselves in the world highs, we have to ultimately obey. And but you know, the like I was talking to this guy at Barnes and Noble, again, a little more conservative than me, but a decent fellow. We had a wonderful conversation, both Vietnam vets, and I actually turned him on to Delta 8 legal weed at the local mall for his leg. He had a bad leg. So he says, "Oh, thanks for the tip. I'm going right over there," he said, you know. And of course, for anyway, that's a digression. But his point was, and I think I'll fill it in a minute, the Delta 8. Anyway, his point was that they should not have abandoned Bagram Air Force Base. And I think he's dead on right. Instead of, maybe they should have done both, but instead of relying, you know, abandoning Bagram and relying on the airport in the center of Kabul capital city, which was, in retrospect, I think a mistake, you know, that the people in around the countryside would have had, I think, better access, maybe with some special ops support and things like that, getting to Bagram and then flying out of Bagram instead of, you know, get to the downtown Kabul airport when the president has fled with $160 million and the Taliban have taken over the capital city. Now, the government says, Blinken, et cetera, say that, well, we didn't think that, you know, Ghani, President Ghani was going to flee with this fleet of Mercedes full of money. But he did, you know, and so suddenly they weren't counting on Kabul being in total 100% controlled by the Taliban. Now, you figure out, well, why didn't you know that? Why couldn't you figure that out? This is a legitimate criticism of the Biden gang. And, you know, they're going to have to live with that issue. Now, but well, then the bottom line for me is, why don't we blame the people who started the goddamn thing in the first place? But anyway. Yeah.
Well, I hate to say this, but I mean, it's a fact. I mean, what do you expect when you send people, you think you're sending your young people off to any kind of thing associated with the military and expect them not to come back as basket cases? I mean, it's a killing machine. It brainwashes the people, the women and men who join it, into becoming killing machines. And it turns a callousness into inhumanity that you can't even do as a parent, you know.
Right.
So,
right.
I mean, I think you know, I'll use the pronoun we now. We are all to blame for letting this go on. You know, there.
That's true. I don't like that pronoun. Yeah, I agree with you.
And Bagwan, you know, you're probably right about that. Keeping that that one base open as a backup or supplement to to withdrawing with some sort of, what do they call it, orderly retreat, you know. But you know, what do you think, we've got 6 minutes left before we go Delta 8 to the shopping mall. What do you think is, I mean, do you think Joe Biden can recover from this? It seemed to be a lot
absolutely. I think Joe Biden he will recover. I think look, Ronald Reagan, 230 Marines were blasted to hell in a apartment building in Beirut. And what did Ronald Reagan do? He left the country with his tail between his legs. Ronald goddamn Reagan, you know. So, you know, every president has his Waterloo, if you will, or some, Bill Clinton had the pharmaceutical plant in Sudan, you know, that was a cover-up for the blue-stained dress, you know, with Monica Lewinsky. you know, these military boondoggles that these people do. You know, look at George Bush. He was reelected after Iraq, you know, and I don't think that, you know, look at, you know, of course, the one they're comparing it to is Benghazi, you know, Benghazi, this, you know, that was what, 4 men were killed, I think, or something like that.
Yeah.
And the ambassador, of course, I guess he was an ambassador. And, you know, that was a clusterfuck. There's no question about it. But, you know, can you blame George or Joe Biden for the way the end game in Iraq or in Afghanistan? Yes and no. Obviously, you know that you can question the details about Bagram Air Force, things like that. But in the long run, the question is going to be, how does the United States deal with Afghanistan from now on? You know, I mean, people don't want to deal with the future, especially the gotcha gang at Fox News. And, you know, they want to deal with something that happened 15 years ago, and they're going to flog it, you know, they're going to hit it with a hammer over and over and over and over and over again. Meanwhile, you know, we're trying to worry about what are we going to do from today to tomorrow and the next day, you know. And that's where we got to pay attention. So the now is, you know, we have this administrative or diplomatic effort in Qatar, I think you correctly pronounced it, Doha, Qatar. And, you know, we will deal with the Taliban vis-a-vis the Taliban and ISIS-K, which apparently are odds, that ISIS and the Taliban are enemies, which is good. And, you know, the resurrection of Al-Qaeda. You know, we still have intelligence. We have drones, you know, super-duper cameras. We'll be able to see if something like Al-Qaeda is forming in Afghanistan. For instance, it's a fact that the plot for 9/11 was created in Europe. These clowns who put it together... you know, I wouldn't call them cowards. I would call them dirty dogs. But, you know, the guys that flew the airplanes into these buildings, this wasn't created in Afghanistan. That's where Osama bin Laden was. They were created in Frankfurt, Germany, and places like that where these people lived. You know, and so let's get our facts right here, you know.
Yeah.
You don't need to be in Afghanistan in order to hate the United States and want to attack the United States. You can be anywhere. We can even have now our own homegrown people are going to attack the United States.
Well,
that's another issue,
frankly.
Another show, you know.
Yeah, that is another show. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I think Biden recover, but I don't think I don't think a large part of the country is forgiving on any of it. Nobody likes to eat shit. You know what I mean? Nobody. And I think the whole...
Well, that's putting it
in the country is,
worst way.
I think the country is in that stage right now. We'll get over it.
Yeah, well, you may be right. You may be right. Well, we should talk about this again in the future.
Sure.
All right, Mike.
All right, brother.
Talk to you later.
John Grant, listeners. Always right on the spot. That's the war and peace. And a Delta 8.